Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Don't even talk to Bulldog about weed. Has that changed? Kim... Is that another one of these things that, you know, used to be a problem, but now you'll allow it?
No, the context of don't even talking about weed was getting into selling it. I think it was like the tail end of the farm rant about hops, how we missed the boat on hops.
Oh, wow.
And the potential legalization of weed, we could have been in on the ground floor growing weed for legal sale. I think that was the point. So don't even talk to me about the opportunity we missed legally selling marijuana. That was what that was.
That rant just keeps on giving.
And I still don't want to hear about it. Because there's the people that are in on that are going to be all set.
Interesting. Even in these challenging times.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. Joining us now on the Wester Hotline is Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. You can follow Mike at PFF underscore Mike. Mike, how are you holding up these days?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Are you in Cincinnati? What's Cincinnati like right now?
Yeah, I'm in Cincinnati here. It hasn't had too many cases, I don't believe so, but it is locked down like pretty much the rest of the country here.
Okay, well, good to hear, I guess, that they're being smart there. So how about your preparations and insight into the draft coming up, Mike? We're, what, less than 3 weeks away now from round one? What's been different about this year, and you know, how have you been able to adjust and do your job?
Well, no pro days has been really different. Actually, at the combine, not a lot of guys tested either. So it's kind of interesting because you're not going to have 40s on a lot of these guys. You're not going to have three cones. You're not going to have that full athletic profile that you got in years past. Now, I think a lot of agents are having their guys run independently and do all that stuff independently and then sending that on to teams. But we as the media aren't going to be able to talk about it. So there's not a lot of new news breaking now, you know, any sort of draft stuff happening that's relevant. So I think this is a year that the teams are really going to have to trust the tape, and you know, evaluators are going to have to trust the tape rather than the underwear Olympics.
Yeah, what I like about that, I think, is really interesting. Is just to whatever extent there's ever been a divide between the well, I want to watch him play, but I also want to know if he ran a 4.35, and just how much like to a detriment teams might penalize a guy who doesn't run a 4.4, but looks good on tape. You know, like maybe it'll all come out in the wash, and it won't be any different than ever. I guess is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think all it does is really give GMs an excuse this year for being bad. You know, it gives them an excuse for missing on picks this year, as opposed to any other year when it's really you know, they get all that information. This year, they can say, "Hey, we didn't get it, so that's why I missed."
One thing that's been said that I like the logic of is that maybe there'd be more good players that don't get drafted. And if teams, I don't know, maybe teams will be hindered in some way as to how many of those guys they can sign and what their usual process is, or maybe not. But, you know, you might have more guys that turn out to be good players despite not having been picked then in another given year?
Yeah, I think you will see. So I think you'll see guys with like off-field character concerns and maybe with injuries fall because teams don't want to take that risk. Teams don't want to, you know, you're not going to be able to get that medical recheck, not be able to get that guy in your building who maybe, you know, has an arrest in his past or something. So you're just not going to take that chance, and then he falls out of the draft, and, you know, maybe he has actually changed. Maybe that injury has actually healed, and well, he's a good football player, but just kind of got screwed by the circumstance. So I think you'll see a number of those guys, maybe not go completely UDFAs, but I think you'll see some of the guys with those red flags that could get vetted in any other draft still be, you know, good players late in, you know, maybe day three.
Mike, to the point you made first about how the combine isn't there to, if you will, rearrange like teams' boards, or the combine was, but then the pro days and everything, what's been limited. Can you think of a player or two that most of us would know about, maybe like a first round pick type of guy, where that would be good or bad for? You know, maybe one of these running backs, hypothetically, is somebody that what the production was not there, or vice versa, you know, based on what kind of his times might be. Who is this good or bad for, if you think of anybody?
I think it's bad for a guy like Laviska Shenault, Colorado wide receiver. He goes to the combine, runs slower than expected because he pulls up lame with a groin injury on his first one, has surgery a few days later, and teams just aren't going to really know, you know, how massive that surgery, like how he's recovering from that surgery. You're not going to be able to go have your doctor check him out, bring him in for a visit, see how that's recovering. And, you know, has on tape, he looks like he runs a 4.4. On tape, he looks explosive, but are you going to be willing to risk that in the first round when he ran a 4.59 at the combine and has had, you know, multiple surgeries now in the past year? I think he's a guy who, if he, you know, in another year, if he got full clean and bill of health before the combine, could go in the first round, but that's just not going to be feasible for a lot of teams to vet so this year. So I do think he's a guy who could slip.
There are probably teams out there that are rooting for that, right? Like, nothing personal to the kid, but that'd be really great someone that they think is super talented is going to drop because of the timing of his injury and all this inability to revisit medicals and whatnot. Like, some team might end up pretty happy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the nature of the business, is you root for guys almost to make less money so they fall to you, and you root for them to have more team favorable contracts and free agency, that sort of thing. That's kind of the whole you know, odd dichotomy of this, is that, you know, for the team perspective, underpaying a guy or getting him value later in the draft is great. From the player's perspective, maybe not as much, but yeah, you are probably, there are probably a lot of teams in the second round who are going to be passing on receiver in the first round that could use one, that would love for his name to still be there.
Mm-hmm. Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus at PFF_Mike. Well, the Bills traded their first-round pick, so we don't have that exactly to ask you about. But your thoughts on Stephon Diggs in this offense, and what that, you know, doing that versus, say, drafting a receiver at 22, for instance.
So, yes, you gave up, you know, a first-rounder, and yes, you have to pay him a good deal, but the upshot is you draft a guy at 22, maybe he becomes Stephon Diggs, not even next year, maybe in like 3 years, is he becomes as good as Stephon Diggs. Like, he's already, you know, a polished route runner, already, you know, well-versed in the little things it takes to become a good NFL receiver. And as good as receiver class as this is, the chances of having a guy who's even, you know, a 900 to 1,000-yard receiver at 22, it's just pretty slim. Like, it's still hard to hit on those guys. Like, there's still that inherent risk of drafting, even in a loaded wide receiver class like this one is. So, you have a roster built to win, and you have a roster that, you know, doesn't have a lot of holes after you did trade for Stephon Diggs. So I can see the logic behind it, and they're a much, much better team for it.
And Diggs, in your mind, is he's a bona fide number one receiver, or is he like a notch below that?
It's always difficult to call a guy, you know, the distinction between number one and a number two. He gets open. That's all I know. Like, he doesn't have the normal number one traits of size, maybe strength, but he gets open in the most valuable area of the football field, and that's down the field. And you already got a guy like that in John Brown, and now having two guys like that, you just create so many mismatched weapons for opposing defenses. And I don't necessarily believe in needing a bunch of different types of wide receivers. You have two guys that are very similar and do, you know, one thing really well, which is win down the football field, Well, and an opposing defense has a slow cornerback, all of a sudden they're screwed because one of that slow cornerback is going to have to match up with a guy that runs a 4-4 and or to sub 4-4, and that could turn out poorly for that corner. You just can't play certain coverages then.
With Mike Renner. So, Mike, this is sort of a new reality for us, talking about the Bills as maybe just about a co-favorite in the AFC East. That is what the odds are looking like. I guess this is some form of the Josh Allen question, all capitals, that you might have been bracing for. Like, what are you on board with that? Do you see this team as likely to make the playoffs or maybe overhyped or just what?
No, like I said, it's difficult to find a need on this roster right now. Like, it's a very complete roster from top to bottom. There's no problem spots, you know, that other, you know, opposing defense, opposing offense could really attack. Now, that doesn't all of a sudden mean you're Super Bowl favorites just because you don't have a weakness. They do have areas where they could and should improve. And the one that just has to improve is Josh Allen. Like, he just has to throw the ball more accurately this year. They need to run that. You just need to pass in today's NFL to win. And we see it with Patrick Mahomes. We just see it like you need to have a high-level passing offense. So it really is. They've done a really good job there of putting all the pieces around him. This really is kind of a make-or-break year. If it doesn't kind of light switch doesn't flip this year, they put as much as they possibly could around him. I'm not sure you can get a more complete roster to help him out.
Do you think they might still have a hole at like pass catching running back? TJ Yeldon is here and he's done that in the league, but it wasn't something that really got off the ground last year. He was inactive often, and you've got a question of whether or not in this offense with Josh Allen as your quarterback, whether or not you want to have him throw into running backs or not.
Yeah, pass catching running back is not, that's the thing. You don't really want to be throwing to them. You want to be throwing the ball down the field. You want guys who can get open and provide those high value plays to your offense. And yes, it's nice to have a guy, but all you really need is a guy who won't drop the ball on swing passes and screen passes to operate an effective offense. And I think Yeldon's more than capable enough of that. And I do also think, though, you should take those swings in the fourth, fifth round pretty much every year at the running back position with how injury prone they are. How you know limited their career spans are. So I do think that they could use that, and later in the draft would be probably as smart of them to do.
Yeah, would that be your prediction for them with Singletary here and Yeldon? Would your prediction for them be that they do that at running back, not like second round or not no one?
Yeah, I would say much later in the draft. Guys like maybe Antonio Gibson out of Memphis or you know other guys down there later who do have hands would probably be my guess because Singletary does have pretty bad hands. As far as we go, he's not the guy you want to be throwing a lot of swing passes to.
How about for the top running back? Are you on team Jonathan Taylor? And do you have, whoever you pick for this, do you have a favorite team fit for them? Hearing recently about Tampa, like Tampa kind of advertised pass-catching running back, whether that's Edwards-Helaire or someone else, I don't know. But what do you like for like an outcome for the top running backs here?
I actually have DeAndre Swift at the top of my rankings, and it's because kind of what we just mentioned, the pass catching ability. He has and can split out wide, run receiver routes, get open against linebackers. That's just what you need in today's NFL. Like, there's a lot of guys who can do a lot of things similarly between the tackles and as runners, but there's not a lot of guys really moving the needle in the passing game. And those are the guys that should be, and I would covet at the NFL level. So DeAndre Swift has that. Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin running back, really doesn't. He's really been limited in that regard over the course of his career at Wisconsin. So I do like Tampa Bay as a fit for him in terms of, you know, Tom Brady utilizes those backs out of the backfield on angle routes, that sort of thing. I would also love to see the Colts attack a running back, too, with how, you know, complete their roster is. I think he would be a really good fit for Phillip Rivers, seeing, you know, how much he threw to Austin Eckler last year. I think that would be a fit there as well.
I like that. By the way, I like that, too. Like, I'm a Marlon Mack owner in Dynasty, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I like Reich so much, Mike, there, mm-hmm. that, you know.
That would be great.
Right? Like, there should – I want to see one or two more pieces on that offense, skill position wise.
I think that's where they go. I mean, they did the trade for Buckner. I think they go offense because I think it's almost like an all in this year after they gave up their first rounder to go all in with Philip Rivers, because they do have a pretty good roster in their own right.
Mike Renner with us from Pro Football Focus. What do you like 1-5 in this draft? I mean, Burrow is kind of almost a given. Do you see a trade for one of the other quarterbacks or what?
I'm pretty sure there will be a trade. And I feel, I don't know if it's going to be up to number 2 or number 3. I would imagine the Redskins still take Chase Young. But I think there will be a trade because the Chargers, they can't go into a new stadium out in L.A. with Tyrod Taylor as their starting quarterback. Guy's been benched the last 2 stops. No knock against him. He's, you know, still probably one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's right about at 32. He still probably deserves a starting job, but that's not the guy you want really leading your franchise. You can do better than that, and they're going to give up the farm, in my opinion, to try to go up and get Tua. And now the Dolphins have the most draft capital. They can go up and get whoever they want after Burrow if they really want to, but I'm not sure they're going to want to, but I think someone's going to move up to 3. So I'd say it goes Burrow, Young, someone takes Tua, Giants take Mekhi Becton. I'm just guessing just because of Dave Gettleman's draft history and what he loves, big dudes who can move. And then I think the Dolphins are the ones who do move up to get Tua, and I think Jeffrey Okuda goes to the Lions then, wherever they do trade down to.
What about Justin Herbert?
I think that's the kind of he's the bridesmaid in all this. Whoever doesn't get to ends up with Herbert here between the Dolphins.
That could be
Chargers.
Maybe that could maybe be the Chargers, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And what are your feelings on him as a prospect, as a comparison? Like, is he absolutely third and a distant third when it comes to Burrow and Tagovailoa?
Yes, I think he's a far distant third, and it's just. Right. He's been playing now for 4 years. I mean, he's been starting at Oregon for 4 years. And he's making the same mistakes and the same sort of issues keep coming up. And you need to see guys fix. You need to see guys improve. Like, he's had the cannon for an arm, and he's been accurate for 4 years. Why has it not gotten better? Why did he never dominate? He had a great O-line at Oregon. No excuse from that perspective. It's just the consistency. It's just not there. And I think you're banking on a lot of things having to change at the next level that we haven't seen change over 4 years at Oregon. So that's scary to me when you're drafting a guy like that in the top 5. I'd probably still take a chance on him maybe end of the first round, but that's about as high as I would reasonably want to draft him.
Couple of
with,
minutes.
With all that, with all that said, do you like Jordan Love better than him?
I don't like Love either, to be honest.
Okay.
I like Love. No, I like Herbert better than Love. Love's just... He's just so inconsistent with his, whether it's his footwork, his accuracy, just a lot of different things to where I don't know if you go from being inconsistent to consistent. Like, I think it's almost an inbuilt trait of his that he is inconsistent with a lot, like I said, footwork, decision making, where he goes with the football. I don't know. I just don't know what to do with that. And having just taken as big a step back as he did last year would really scare me.
What about Jalen Hurts? Are you a believer in that player, that idea?
I think there's an offense where he can succeed. And so my comp for him, you know, in the PFF draft guide was Tyrod Taylor. And that, like, Tyrod Taylor ran top 12 offenses for back-to-back years in Buffalo at one point. Like, there, if you go run heavy and with his legs and what he can do, like, that is a modern – there's a path to success for that in the NFL offensively. I just think he's so limited as a passer, though. Like, he doesn't have the downfield accuracy that Tyrod Taylor did, and I don't even think Tyrod Taylor was like that accurate down the football field, but I don't think Jalen Hurts has really been an accurate. I'm not on board with him as, you know, a top two-round kind of guy.
One more from me, Mike. Wide receiver. We're asking, I mean, everybody. It's one of the great topics within this draft is the top of the class at wide receiver. How many guys are on your top tier, and is it, like, really defined for you?
So my top tier would just be 2 guys. I think Jerry Jeudy from Alabama and CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma are day one, surefire, could do everything in the NFL. Like, they're, you know, 1,000 yards right out the gate. I would take those guys, you know, top 5, 10 in any other draft. Like, I think they're that good. And then after that, there's kind of, I think Henry Ruggs is to me in his own tier in that he's just too special of an athlete to not be some sort of weapon on a football field. You know, he... to not at least pose, like, be strike fear in opposing defenses and make jobs easier for everyone else on the football field with how he just can't be covered in a straight line one-on-one with that sort of speed. So he's kind of in his own tier after that. And then there's that third tier that was kind of where Buffalo would have been picking, mm-hmm. where it's guys you don't feel quite as comfortable, have, you know, some sort of red flag or some sort of concerns about them, but are all crazy talented. And like I said, there's probably about five guys in that tier that I'd all put in the first round conversation. I'll be comfortable drafting in the first round, but just don't feel quite as strongly about it as Ruggs and Judy.
All right,
How do you feel about the tight end class, Mike? I mean, last year we had Fant and Hockenson, and it was pretty hot to talk about them, and I think we even spent some time thinking about whether Buffalo would be a fit for either one of those guys. They ended up with Dawson Knox, who's, I think, got some promise, but still has a ways to go to become a real producer. There's not even really a first-round tight end in this class, is there?
I think it's a really bad tight end class. I don't even have a second-round tight end in this class. That's how bad it is. I think the first one on the PFF draft board somewhere in the 70s. It's just, there's not, and the bad part is about it is the guys who are the best receivers, in my opinion, are all like very much tweeners, well under 250 pounds sort of guys, to where that's really just not really tight end anymore in the NFL. No one's going to respect you as a blocker, and no one's going to match up just because you bring him out on the field as a tight end. No one's going to, bring on that extra linebacker to match up with you. They're just going to say, hey, yeah, try to run off of that tight end. No one's really going to respect that. So those undersized guys kind of don't present the same matchup weapons that maybe they did about a decade ago.
Fant and Hockenson, Bulldog, your boyfriend Sternberger as well last year. You were
right.
Talking a lot about him.
Jace Sternberger.
Green Bay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Mike, thank you so much. Best of luck to you and everyone at PFF. We always love talking to you.
For sure, fellow. Thanks for having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.